But no longer with us, sadly. Thankfully, though, with us is Paul Wiltshire, who has just become my favourite man of the afternoon, because he's brought me homemade spiced apple cake. Paul, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
It's absolutely delicious as well.
Thank you.
You've brought loads, and I think we're supposed to pass it around the office, but they'll be lucky if it gets out of the studio, Freddie. Yes. Now then, I know that we're talking about William the Conqueror Day, but why? Why have you picked him?
944 years ago today, exactly, on a Thursday, the early hours of the morning, on a rainy morning, on the 28th of September, 1066, it was William, who was then Duke of Normandy, of course, and only Duke of Normandy, landed for the first time on English soil at Pevensey Bay in Sussex.
Now, at that point, my history lessons serve me correctly, and you'll have to tell me if I'm wrong here. He was invited, wasn't he, to come? It wasn't not the 1066 thing, but wasn't he invited to come?
Yeah, we'll talk about that, but the suggestion was that he was invited, but the suggestion comes only from Norman sources, never mentioned in English sources.
Oh, really? That's
interesting. Yes, indeed. I'll explain that as we go along, if you
like. Oh, yes, I think jolly well should. There is a Nottingham connection.
Yes, he came to Nottingham, and I'd like to ask a question for your listeners in that regard.
Fantastic.
If that's okay.
Yeah.
No prizes. I know I haven't got millions of pounds for it, just for fun, just to test people's knowledge. But William the Conqueror came to Nottingham for the first time 2 years after the Battle of Hastings. So he was here in 1068. When he first came here, he gave very specific instructions for something to be done. What were those instructions? And the second part, if people do know, to whom did he entrust those instructions?
There you go. That's your historical challenge this afternoon. Nottingham 9343434. If you know the answer to a two-part question this afternoon on William the Conqueror. Now, in the little bit of research I did on him, he did have a most unfortunate nickname that we're not going to be able to mention on air. Was it because he was a person? What was he like as a human?
No, he was a product of an illegitimate affair.
Oh, that's where the name came from.
Yes,
okay,
indeed,
lovely.
Yeah. I will tell you, Amanda, actually, interesting to say that whenever that was mentioned, or he was made aware that it had been mentioned or discussed in circles, he reacted in the most violent, unimaginable way possible.
Well, yeah, well, it's not a very nice thing to call somebody, is it?
No, but it was true. Because that's how he was known at the time. His father, who was not even then a duke, he met a low-born woman. That's how they called them, a lady called Herliver, or Herliver, or whichever way you prefer
Herliver
to pronounce
it. Herliver was a funny name.
Yes. She was the daughter of either a tanner or a baker. We know that she then went on to marry a nobleman in the Normandy area, and we know that she had other children. So William then had half-brothers. Oh, and one of them's a very interesting man, because that half-brother was a man called Odo, who became Bishop of Bayeux. And it was almost certainly Bishop Odo of Bayeux who commissioned the Bayeux Tapestry.
Really?
Yes, yes.
Because he must be one of the best-known historical figures, because we have got the Bayeux Tapestry. There is the Doomsday Book. I mean, he's quite well-documented, William the Conqueror.
Yeah, we've got a lot of sources. The majority of them are Norman, and the thing we've got to be careful of, Amanda, is that because they're Norman sources, they're akin to propaganda. They were all out to promote this guy and give him a wonderful image and reputation. In fact, he didn't deserve it, because he wasn't a very nice man at all.
Really?
Not at all appealing, not at all pleasant. Extremely violent, as we'll see, even by the standards of his day. But we've got two Norman monks. Confusingly, they're both called William. They're both men of the church. Who they were is really irrelevant. But they both produced contemporary accounts of William. One of them was actually his chaplain. So you have to bear in mind that they are akin to propaganda, that to promote him. And if the facts didn't fit with the way they wanted to portray him, they just missed those facts around, or they changed them.
How do we know that, though? How do we know that their image of him wasn't
because
the right one and we weren't the propagandists?
They contravene the physical evidence. They contravene what we now know. They contravene the sources. We've got, of course, the Bayeux Tapestry. We've got the Doomsday Book, which tells about him. We've got a wonderful document called the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, and I've got that with me. The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, to simplify, is a collection of ancient manuscripts written in various cathedrals and centres of learning in England by the Anglo-Saxons from the 9th century onwards. And they talk about William.
Right.
From an English person's point of view. And that's the key. We have to bear that in mind.
Nobody's come in with the answer to your question yet, Paul, so I think you're going to have to belt it out again, love. What was the question?
Yes, when William the Conqueror first came to Nottingham 2 years after the invasion, he gave very specific instructions for something to be done. What were those instructions? And if anybody knows the answer to this second part, to whom did he entrust those instructions?
Nottingham 9343434. We'll find out a little bit more about William the Conqueror in just a tick.
Where do all policemen live? Let's be Avenue. Don't worry, the professionals are in town. The Nottingham Comedy Festival. Be part of it. BBC Radio Nottingham.
Thinking while you were far away, just how much I miss you and how time it ticks away. So sad when we are fighting, too much tension, too much hate. Sometimes we need reminding before it gets too late. Just one moment in my day, yeah. Take me up to a place.
One Night in Heaven at 22 minutes on a Tuesday afternoon. Amanda Bowman with you for Richard Spur. And chatting away to Paul Wiltshire about William the Conqueror. Do you think, I mean, because everybody, it's the one bit of history that most of us retain, that 1066,
yes,
poor old Harold gets the arrow in the eye. Do you think all of us set up our rather dodgy relationship with France?
Yes, I think it definitely goes back to that. And I can argue that quite clearly, because if you think about 1966... July of that year, most people of a certain age will know immediately England won the World Cup. What they won't know is that 16 weeks later was the 900th anniversary of the Battle of Hastings, and it went completely unmarked in this country.
Well, that's because we didn't win that one.
Exactly, but there's the key, you see. Now, a contemporary monk, a near contemporary monk, just after the Battle of Hastings, his name was William of Malmesbury.
William.
Yeah, exactly.
Goodness me.
Malmesbury's the oldest borough in England. Now, he had Anglo and French parents, so well-placed to comment. But this is what he wrote. This was a fatal day for England, a sad disaster for the dear kingdom. So he was harbouring regrets then, and I think we still are harbouring regrets now. And it's for that very reason that here we are in Nottingham in the 21st century, and we know actually very little about William the person. And it's that gap that I'd like to fill today, if we get a chance, you know,
absolutely,
just talk about him,
totally,
the individual.
I mean, you were talking to me about the fact that he was a very violent man, he was an unpleasant man, but I'm going to sort of pin you down on this. That's only from our perspective, because the propaganda, as you call it, from the French side of things, said something completely different, didn't they?
Yes, they did. They
so
tried
how do we
to...
know which is right? I just don't...
Because the facts, now, when we look back with a more scientific eye, the facts slowly over the years have come together, and now we can see... with clear 2020 vision from a distance, what sort of person he was and how he had behaved. But we have to put his behaviour in the context of 11th century Normandy and England. We can't make a personal judgment from today's perspective, because today we have a culture that's defined by respect for human rights. In those days, that didn't exist. But the one thing you have to say, that whatever your perspective, he changed English history in the way that only Henry VIII could replicate 500 years later, because we got a new royal dynasty, we got a new language, we got radically different personal names coming in, our church changed significantly, there was a massive transfer of land to the Normans, and every single position of power in this country was removed from the English and handed over to Normans. There was only one English remained, the rest were all Normans, and by 1100, in the reign of his son, Henry I, 84 castles had been built in this country, including the one here in Nottingham, so he had quite an impact.
And was he responsible for the Tower of London as well, is that right?
Yes, he was. He had the Tower of London. The Tower of London and Castle were put underway at the same time, one on the east side of London, one on the west side of London, protecting the Thames Valley, Windsor Castle. They were put underway at about the same time, not long after the one here in Nottingham, actually.
Now, they say that behind every good man there's a good woman. Was there a good woman behind William the Conqueror?
Oh, I tell you what, Amanda, in my opinion, the study of women from our medieval past or our Norman past or our Tudor past is far more rewarding than ever the study of men was. I think his wife, Matilda, is a fascinating character. She was courageous. She had to put up with an awful lot. Poor lady had 10 children. Some sources say 11, but there are 10 that we know of. What is not known is that Matilda, whereas William was illegitimate, let's just put it away, and whereas he had no real background, Matilda did. She was an aristocrat. She was a daughter of the Count of Flanders, but she was also a seventh-generation direct descendant of Alfred the Great. She was an Anglo-Saxon by blood, and that is often forgotten.
Goodness.
Yeah.
That's quite... Because there is that English tie there again, then.
Yes, indeed, yes. Yes, indeed. The marriage, when he married her, deliberately, and there's all sorts of famous fables about him dragging her off a horse to propose to her in Normandy. But
he does sound
fables.
A charmer, I have to say.
He wasn't a very nice man. He wasn't a very nice man. We want to get on to his age. We have to remember that this was an age of terrible, terrible violence. When he was a boy of 7 or 8, he became Duke of Normandy because his father went on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem and he died there. So suddenly he became Duke of Normandy and he had to be moved between secret addresses at speed because his life was constantly under threat. He was murdered on at least one occasion. The people appointed to act as bodyguards and tutors to him were murdered, both of them.
Dear.
Yeah, and the violence...
Winning time, I mean, really violent.
They were, and the violence that he saw at that time had a profound effect on him, because the one thing that he learned, of course, because he was a child, the one thing he learned was the violence, but more importantly, fear and intimidation brought results.
Yeah, meant power.
You've got it, Amanda, absolutely right.
And, the phrase, you catch more flies with sugar than vinegar, really applies to William the Conqueror, did it? No.
In 1522, William the Conqueror's tomb was opened, and the remains indicated that he was a very big man with long limbs. We know that in later life, he became very fat, and that was a trait that he actually passed on to his sons and grandchildren. It was a trait that was common with English kings at that time. The tomb, unfortunately, was disturbed by looters during the French civil and religious wars, of which there were many. But a thigh bone has survived, and that was examined as recently, actually, as 1961. That pointed to a man who was 5'10" tall, just to give you some perspective.
Do you know, that's incredibly tall for those days, because the generations do get taller as we go through, don't we? We've only got to look at our own children.
Yeah, and that trait
to see how that happens.
That trait passed on to his children and grandchildren. We get Edward I, known as Longshanks. He was 6'2".
Goodness me.
Yeah, so that trait did tend to pass on to his children and grandchildren. We know from images on the Beau tapestry he was almost certainly clean-shaven, and he was very rosy-cheeked, red-faced. His own son, of course, William II, was called William Rufus, which was either red-haired or red-faced. Yeah.
I want to bring you back to Kurt just for a second. Is it right that he is responsible for having surnames in this country?
Yes, after the Norman Conquest, although surnames had started to be introduced, after the Norman Conquest, surnames became the norm. Now, if we take your name, for example, there might be a million Amandas in Nottingham, and as they started to get more frequent and more common, we had to distinguish between one Amanda and another.
This is fascinating. I'm going to hold you right there. We're going to take some news headlines. and then afterwards chat more about William the Conqueror. These are your headlines. The company which supplied the taser weaponry used by police in the standoff with the gunman Raoul Moat has had its licence revoked. Nottingham City Council is asking residents which services they most want to see protected from the cuts. And Mansfield swimmer Becky Adlington has given the Commonwealth Games her full backing. And your weather for Nottinghamshire. Well, for the rest of the afternoon, hopefully that cloud will gradually lift. Temperatures reaching 17 Celsius, 63 degrees Fahrenheit, but still a bit gloomy, I'm afraid. Later on tonight, patchy rain pushes in, with temperatures dropping to 11 Celsius, 52 degrees Fahrenheit. Doesn't sound too bad, does it?
M1 southbound is still queuing due to the fact that earlier on, around about 20 to 9, we had a shed of meat across the M1 around junction at 25. It's all been cleared away and all lanes have really been reopened, but it is still taking some time for you to get through there. And it's finally starting to look better on Clifton Boulevard heading out, as well as the Woodhouse Road through Mansfield, the A60. CCTV telling me now that that's running pretty well. Public transport also getting away according to time. I'm Alex Gale with your next update in half an hour.
More at bbc.co.uk/Nottingham.
BBC Radio Nottingham.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. Without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
Barclay and Crazy at BBC Radio Nottingham. And chatting away to Paul Wiltshire this afternoon. We'll get back to that chat in just a second. But the thing I'm asking you is which children's shows children's characters, rather, whether that's in film, or television or book or however it came to you, do you think really shaped your life, or which were your favourites? Nottingham 9343434 is the number. To text, you start with the word not to 81333, and that's exactly what Shaz in Bullwell did. Thank you, Shaz. She says, my favourite show was Mr Ben and Rainbow and the Mr Men. Not lovely. What about you, Paul? Which
surprise, surprise. The most were historical, but Richard Lionheart.
Richard? No, Richard Green.
Richard the Lionheart. Oh, I can even sing the song.
Beautiful.
Robin Hood.
Yeah.
And his
that
merry
was
men.
Richard Green, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Richard Green. Yeah.
Do you know, I actually heard the story that this bride asked for the theme to Robin Hood to walk up the aisle to. She thought she was getting Everything I Do, Bryan Adams. And she walked up the aisle to...
That's some bloke's eye out with that, mate.
So yours are all historical?
Yeah, and also the Lone Ranger. You, like most lads, you'd run around the car park smacking your backside, pretending you're on silver, didn't you?
Oh,
yeah.
Hi-ho, silver away!
He came to Nottingham, didn't he?
Who, the Lone Ranger?
Yeah, he did, the man of
did
play.
He
came here to Nottingham, yes,
oh,
and
I missed him, I can't believe it. Do you remember Twizzle?
Yeah, I do, yeah, good.
Thank goodness for that. Do you remember a programme called Pingwings?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. You're the only person I've ever met. I have to go and find a clip of it on YouTube
because I'm
send
old.
It to my friend. But they were little knitted penguins, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
They lived on a farm.
Yeah, they were.
A terribly posh voice.
Yes,
Richard Burr was talking about language and things earlier on. He would have approved of
I sent an email in, I have to say.
Did you?
Language, did I ever? Yeah.
What was your view then? What did you say?
Well, there's a difference between evolution of our language, which I understand, and how we absorb other cultures and faiths and all the rest of it, and dialect in our language. That's fine, that's healthy. But there's a difference between that and corruption of our language. And when I walk around, wherever I go, whether it's Nottingham or wherever, and you hear corruptions which become crude and they're offensive, then I have a real problem with it, you know.
Good for you. I'm with you on that. I think we've got a beautiful language and we shouldn't abuse it, basically. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although I do find some of the expressions that you hear quite amusing.
I mean, let's absorb them and, you know, that's fine. That's how a language evolves. But when it gets corrupted, and it becomes offensive. And you exclude a generation, particularly the older people, who
have
spent a bit of time...
I think that's part of the point, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't you think that's why kids do it, so that the parents can't understand?
Yeah, I think that's what
that's all about. Let's get back to William the Conqueror. I understand he had a bit of a temper on him.
Oh, boy, did he. If his birth status was ever mentioned, it is known that he reacted very violently. He was intolerant. We know that voice was harsh and very rough. He was a semi-literate, would you believe? The man who ruled this empire for so long was semi-literate, yes. He tried, but then almost immediately gave up attempts to speak English. He never spoke our language.
Well, even though he was ruler here?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, I think that's very rude. I do.
He spoke French with what we would understand to be a Scandinavian accent because, of course, his heritage was Viking. He had a foul temper. He was completely intolerant, and his raging tempers were a trait that were passed on to his son and grandsons, actually.
So how did poor old Matilda cope with him then?
Do you know, that's a key point, because in later life, William fell into dispute with his sons, ended up at war with his own sons.
Oh, dear.
And poor Matilda had to try and balance her loyalty for her sons and her husband and her duty and her love for her sons, and she managed to do that. But by goodness me, she was under terrible pressure. And, of course, this poor lady had to travel between Normandy and England. And we know that William the Conqueror crossed the Channel 19 times. And of the 54 months of his reign, he spent 60% of it actually in Normandy. And, of course, poor Matilda's having to follow him. In that time, she's giving birth to 10 children. I mean, this was a tough woman.
Tell me about it.
You know, she was a tough woman.
I know women that cry if they break the nails. I mean, for goodness sake, she was hard, wasn't she?
Yeah, just to go back to his temper, these were violent times. And we know of one Norman lord who was invited to a wedding feast at this time.
Was he called William?
No, he wasn't.
Oh, good, because everybody else was.
He was invited to a wedding feast, and as a result of his supposedly offending William, he left that wedding feast minus his ears, his eyes, and his genitals. That's how violent a man he was, and that was the consequence of his temper. These were times when women, children, and men were brutalised, they were tortured, and they were brutalised in this way without a moment's consideration or compassion. You know, this is the age in which he lived in. Yeah.
I mean, I've been to a few rough wedding receptions in my time, but nothing like that, I can tell you. And Mickey was at a lovely one, actually. Nothing like that happened there, did it, Mick? No, thank goodness for that. We talk about the violence and everything else, and they do say that he that lives by the sword dies by the sword. I understand he had a pretty horrific... Was it his... Because he fell off a horse when he died, didn't he?
two stories. One that he died of heat exhaustion because he was in Mance, M-A-N-T-S, in Normandy, fighting a battle. And either he was overcome with exhaustion, or, more likely, that his horse tried to jump a ditch and the pommel of the saddle ruptured into his stomach. Now, bear in mind, he was grossly overweight.
I do hope you finished your lunch, by the way.
Oh, it gets worse, or better, whichever way you are, I'll warn you. And, of course, that caused terrible injuries to his intestines. And slowly but surely, he died in 1987, September 1987. When he died, there was pandemonium and panic, because, of course, there were two regions, Normandy, England, now without a ruler. Who was going to rule? Bearing in mind he'd been at war with his son, his heir, his own heir. So, as when all dictators and despots die, there's pandemonium after the event, and we've seen that in the Middle East today, haven't we? Mm-hmm. There's an immediate parallel there. After he died, his body lay unattended in a crypt for some time. It was moved to various locations, and it was very hot.
Oh, no.
Now, for those of you eating dinner...
No,
put it to one
don't be graphic, Paul. Just please, because I have a very weak stomach.
So
the body was not in a good state. Let's put it like that.
Yes, and eventually it gets taken to an abbey that he'd founded at Caen, C-A-E-N, in Normandy. And it's carried up the aisle. And only one of his sons, the future Henry I, was there.
Was it all in one piece at that point?
Oh, yeah.
Right, OK. That's
fine. OK, so far. Right, put your meal aside now. Because when they came to put the body into the space allocated for it in the nave, which is still there, the Abbey of St Etienne, it was too small. So they removed it from the coffin and forced it into the hole, and the body burst.
Oh, dear.
Yes. It filled the abbey with a vile and foul stench, and to put a long story short, everybody in the abbey just fled, leaving the poor retainers to have to continue with the burial.
Do you know what? I don't know. I can't believe I'm going to say this now, but here's Dusty Springfield. I really can't cope. I'm going to have a lie down. Poor old William the Conqueror. Please don't have nightmares. It happened a long time ago. Here's Dusty.
Preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gathered round and started talking, Cousin Billy would take me walking through the backyard. We go walking, then he'd look into my eyes. Lord knows, to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. See what he was. Yes, he was. Being good isn't always easy, no matter how hard I try. When he started sweet talking to me, he'd come and tell me everything is alright. He'd kiss and tell me everything's alright. Can I get away again tonight? The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was. He was. Lord, who he was.
Yes, he was.
Dusty Springfield, son of a preacher man, with the sweet-talking Paul Wiltshire this afternoon, telling us absolutely horror stories about the poor old body of William the Conqueror. Paul, just remind us quickly, what's the just-for-fun competition question today?
Yes, in 1068, 2 years after the Battle of Hastings and the conquest, William the Conqueror came to Nottingham. We know that from contemporary sources. When he came here, almost immediately, he gave very specific instructions for something to be done. Does anybody out there know what those instructions were, and even perhaps to whom He gave those instructions.
Now, we've had some suggestions, so I'm going to whiz through those and then leave you in suspense for a little while, and then Paul will come back and tell us whether you're right or not. And also, I can introduce you to Nicola as well. OK, Rocky in St Anne says, was it to make Southwell Cathedral or Nottingham Castle? And was it handed over to Sir John Mortimer? Sally in Arnold says, did he order a bridge over the Trent or the castle to be built? David Woodthorpe initiated the building of Nottingham's Norman Castle. Brian in Trowell, who can't come on because he's having a new kitchen put in. Hope it goes well, Brian. Instructions for a castle to be built by William de Peveril. And Brian in Mansfield Woodhouse wonders if he asked his son Robert to carry out... wonders if he asked his son Robert to carry out a do-it. I think Mickey's gone a bit bonkers. I didn't understand that, did you?
No.
Get to the bottom of that one, but we can say one of those is spot on, isn't it?
It is indeed.
It is.
A man walks down the street. He says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a carton in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger, dogs in the moonlight. Far away in my well-lit world. Just a beer man, get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, Betty, when you call me, you can call me Al. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and oh, my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone, gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, and Betty, when you call me, you can call me out, call me out.
Paul Simon and You Can Call Me Al, but I prefer Amanda Bowman, actually, at BBC Radio Nottingham. I can tell you the question that Paul Wiltshire asked. Brian in Trowell, absolutely spot on. And apparently, I'm sorry, Brian in Mansfield Woodhouse, Mickey sort of made a bit of a nonsense of your answer. Wondered if he asked his son Robert to carry out a survey was what it should have said. And Mickey put a do it. What's a do it? I don't know. Brian in Trowell, well done. He knows that instructions were sent by William the Conqueror for a castle to be built by William de Peveril. We'll have more of a chat with Paul and also with Nicola in just a sec.
Your stories with Frances Finn.
Well, we were going together one evening and I wasn't feeling very well. I lived in the centre of London and she was on the outskirts and I really didn't feel like going all the way out there and back again. So I put her into a taxi to take her home. Well, it was the safest thing to do rather than an underground at 10 o'clock at night. And unfortunately, the taxi driver wasn't a taxi driver at all, and she was raped and murdered.
Did you have guilt as well? Because you put her in the taxi.
Yes, because I put her in the taxi, yes. A lot of guilt.
Real life, real stories, real emotions. Frances Finn, every weekday from 9, BBC Radio Nottingham.
Silence until you come and sit. can't stand on mountains. You raise me up to walk on stormy seas. I am strong when I am on your shoulders. You raise me up to more than I can be.
Life and You Raise Me Up at BBC Radio Nottingham. I'm having a very jolly Tuesday afternoon and I hope you are as well. Paul Wiltshire and I are now joined by Nicola Holmes. Good afternoon, Nicola.
Hello.
Now, you also have a historical connection, don't you?
I do, yes. I am a community librarian, but I am really interested in local history. And part of my job is trying to get access to that for everybody else so they can. We welcome people into the library to have a look at the records we've got. And to find out more for themselves through, you know, books, maps, photographs, all sorts of things like that.
And you're focusing on one particular part of Nottinghamshire this Thursday afternoon, aren't you?
That's right. At Southglade Park Library on Thursday afternoon, we're having a local history event. We've got Dorothy Ritchie from the Local Studies Library coming along. We've got a display, lots of photographs and books to look at. We've got a quiz for people to join in. And, of course, tea and coffee.
It all sounds fantastic. I'm going to sort of pick the bones out of it a little bit, but it's worth mentioning there is a connection between the area that Nicola's talking about, sort of Bedford Park and all around there, and William the Conqueror, isn't there?
Yes, one of William's great passions that he brought here and passed on to his sons, hunting. He had a great passion for it, and I mean, a lot of people know that, of course, he created. When he passed between England and Normandy, he invariably travelled via Southampton, and for his convenience, it was he who had the New Forest created, and it was.
That's where
created.
I come from.
Well, it was
and
created
I was wondering
for
if
him.
Rufus, William Rufus, is the same one with the Rufus Stone in the forest. Is
yes,
that the
it
same
is.
One?
He was shot dead by an arrow there, accidentally on purpose, possibly. We don't know.
We have to. If you go to school in the New Forest, you have to go and look at that stone at least 15 times a week. You know that, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, indeed. He actually lost his son there as well, incidentally. But anyway. And of course, other hunting forests were created right in the country slowly but surely, including, of course, the one here in Nottingham and in Sherwood Forest. And when he came here, he had Nottingham Castle built. Nottingham really was the Anglo-Saxon centre, which we can see out the window here. That's basically the area around what is now St Mary's Church. That was the Anglo-Saxon settlement, looking down over the Trent from that point. When William came, he saw this enormous plot of rock with a very strategic position, and that's where he had Nottingham Castle built, exactly for that reason. Now, William Peveril, who built Nottingham Castle, also built, we believe, Lendon Priory.
Ah, and that's where.
So around those two areas, their communities began to generate. The French centres, and we probably a lot of people know, there was an English centre, the Anglo-Saxon centre, and a Norman French centre in Nottingham. That's it.
Womack and Teardrops at BBC Radio Nottingham. More great music on the way and more really great chat as well. We will keep our history boffins, Paul Wiltshire and Nicola Holmes. Find out a little bit more about how you can help Nicola out well after the news at 3 o'clock, which will be extremely interesting. The other thing that I want to know from you, please, if you don't mind awfully telling me, is which children's television programmes, films, which characters really left a lasting impression on you? What were your favourite ones? Unsurprisingly, Paul Wiltshire has already told us that his were all the historical ones, like Robin Hood and the Lone Ranger. And another one I can't remember for the time being. Who was it?
Richard the Lionheart.
Thank you very much, Paul. Richard the Lionheart. We'll find out from Nicola what her favourite children's characters were as well, but I'd also like to know yours. And later on this afternoon, along with this beautiful spiced apple cake that Paul's brought in, I'll be talking to a lady who swapped a very high-profile job for cupcakes. Oh, it's a cakey afternoon here today.
A passion for Nottinghamshire life. Nottinghamshire
life. BBC Radio Nottingham.
It's 3 o'clock, I'm Naveen Malik. Ed Miliband is addressing the Labour conference for his first time as leader. In his early comments, he paid tribute to his brother David, who he defeated in the leadership contest by 1%. He said he intended to get Labour back into government after one term and stressed the need for humility as the party tries to work out where it went wrong.
We need to learn some painful truths about where we went wrong and how we lost touch. We must not blame the electorate for ending up with a government that we don't like. We should blame ourselves. We understand why people felt they couldn't support us. We have to show we understand the problems people face today. Let me tell you, this will require strong leadership. It won't always be easy. You won't always like what I have to say. But you've elected me leader, and lead I will.
And Nottinghamshire's Lord Faulkner will be giving his reaction to that speech to Alan Clifford at 4 o'clock. Nottingham residents are being asked which services they most want to protect from cuts as the City Council prepares for its next budget. It's expecting a reduction of government funding of 25%. An 8-week consultation is being launched. The company which supplied the tasers used by Northumbria Police in the standoff with the gunman Raoul Moat has had its licence revoked. The Home Secretary Theresa May said Protect Systems supplied the X12 tasers while they were still being tested. The firm, which also supplies Nottinghamshire Police, has made no comment. The Israeli Navy has intercepted an aid ship carrying Jewish activists trying to break the blockade of the Gaza Strip. The Navy says those on board did not resist. They included an 82-year-old Holocaust survivor and an Israeli man, Ralmi Elhanan, whose daughter was killed by a Palestinian suicide bomber in 1997. He says the blockade punishes the wrong people.
I have no sympathy for the Hamas. Hamas are the killers of my daughter. But I think 1.5 million people who are living them are victims, like I am a victim, like the Israelis are a victim, everyone is a victim. And we must stop once and for all this endless cycle of victimhood. And the only way to do it is to talk.
Nottinghamshire police have charged a man with a robbery at a mobile post office in Sutton Cum Lounge. 37-year-old Paul Robinson of Albert Road in Retford is accused of taking part in the attack last Thursday. A postmaster was attacked with a mallet. Two other men, aged 47 and 36, have been bailed pending further inquiries. The Chief Minister of Delhi says it will take another 2 to 3 days to complete preparations for the Commonwealth Games, which are due to begin on Sunday. Officials had earlier promised that all work would be finished by tomorrow, but a fifth of the accommodation is still not ready. Mansfield's double Olympic gold medalist, Becky Adlington, has given the Games her full support and says she never considered part.
Commonwealth Games England don't want to risk our safety at all. They all have our best interests at heart, so they keep us updated on absolutely everything that's kind of happened, and they've just made sure we're aware, but if they've never felt like we should, so we have a trust in them.
News on BBC Radio Nottingham, it's 3 minutes past 3.
And your weather for Nottinghamshire? Well, still a bit gloomy, I'm afraid. A cloud will lift during the afternoon. Temperatures reaching 17 Celsius, that's 63 degrees Fahrenheit. And later, dry to begin with tonight before patchy rain pushes in from the south. Temperatures dropping to 11 degrees Celsius, that's 52 degrees Fahrenheit.
Traffic starting to ease on the M1 southbound now. After that earlier shed load of meat was cleared away and lanes reopened, traffic now starting to move rail around junction 25, but it is still looking very slow northbound on the A38. If you're crossing over towards Alfreton, coming off the M1, you'll find Bramble Way slow going for you, but it's looking good heading out to Nottingham, Clifton Boulevard and Woodhouse Road all moving well, and Woodhouse Road moving well out of Mansfield, of course. Public transport, trains also getting away according to schedule. I'm Alex Gale with your next update in half an hour.
Amanda Bowman.
BBC Radio Nottingham.
Strikes on the hour, and the sun begins to fade.
Houston. I Want to Dance with Somebody at BBC Radio Nottingham. Good afternoon. I'm Amanda Bowman, sitting in for Richard Spur at 8 minutes past three, having a wonderful time actually chatting with Paul Wiltshire and Nicola Holmes. Who, Nicola, we haven't had a chance to really get into what you're doing, because I know that you're on the hunt, aren't you, for old photographs?
That's right. Yes, we've got a lot of photographs. There's a really good website called Picture the Past, which is accessible to everybody to look at. One of the things when we started looking at the Bestwood area was we realised actually Top Valley and Rice Park, there's hardly any photographs from the period when they're actually construction started on the houses there. So that's something we're really lacking. And what we'd like is that for local people to come along and bring some of their photographs and we can scan them in.
And you've had a good response from Bestwood Park, though, haven't you?
Well, we already had quite a lot of photographs of that area, and there are quite a lot that you can look at of the houses under construction, Arnold Road, when there was like one car on it.
Mm. Those are the days,
aren't Yes, yeah. So there is quite a lot already, and we've had some really interesting accounts and stories and people's memories of when they first moved to the estates and what it was like living with fields all around them when they'd previously lived somewhere like St Anne's. So we've had quite a lot of information about that, but the Rise Park.
And of course,
and
you can always join in. You can give us a call now on Nottingham 9343434, and some of your reminiscences will be lovely, and Nicola will take those away, I'm sure, and all for Thursday afternoon, which I believe is totally free.
It is, yes.
Don't you think it's wonderful that we can get real living local history? Because you could walk out of this building now, and go for a two mile walk. And actually, my father always says you can learn everything you need to know about the history of that place if you know where to look.
The thing is, Amanda, I mean, we mentioned earlier, by looking out the window here, I'm going back immediately 2,000 years just by looking out the window and the settlement here. But all national history, and I'm passionate about English history, but it all starts with local history. English history is just a conglomeration of all the local histories put together.
It's like a patchwork quilt, really,
isn't
it?
Yes, it is indeed. It's the sum of the parts, isn't it?
From listening to what you were saying earlier, Nottinghamshire is really important historically. It seems to me that a lot of the kings, a lot of the really important people throughout history came to Nottingham, didn't they?
Yes, after William the Conqueror, we know that both of his sons who became kings, the second and Henry the First, certainly came here. Henry the Second did. Henry the Second did a lot of building, and so it goes on. Yes, and at the end of our medieval period, the last monarch, our last medieval monarch, was Richard the Third, and of course he was here in Nottingham and Nottingham Castle, which he loved, and it left here to go to the battle just down the Ray in Leicester, and lost his crown to Henry Tudor. So Nottingham, is very, very key.
The area that you're talking about, does that have a big historical background, Nicola?
It does, yes. And the Bestwood Lodge, particularly, was given to Nell Gwynn. And she...
The lady with the oranges.
Yes, by Charles II, yes. And she passed it on to her illegitimate son, the Duke of St Albans. And he and his family and his descendants developed the lodge, rebuilt it. It was an amazing country house in the Victorian period, visited by the Prince of Wales and some really important guests.
Well, what's really funny is that Bestwood Lodge actually has a huge place in my husband's personal history, because it was there, at tender age of 11, he developed his love for trees, and he's had a career in tree surgery ever since. He was a volunteer and he knows those grounds and everything. We take the dogs there quite often. And he knows that area like the back of his hand. Mm. And it really is the most beautiful part of Nottinghamshire, isn't it?
It is, yes. And the park has been preserved, so it's really nice to know that a lot of those trees are still there. And they're still there as a reminder of what the area used to be like.
I hope you don't mind me saying this, though, Nicola. The sort of area that you're talking about, a lot of that now, sort of Top Valley and Rise Park, and it's housing estates. So can you still get a historical feel from there?
I think you can, because when you're walking around the housing estate, you can still see the trees, you know, part of some of the remnants of the original forest. There's Glade Hill, which is a beautiful hill, which still has trees on the top, which you can see from all around. So there's little remnants and reminders of the past all over the place.
Paul, I'm afraid, I'm very sorry, but you've been wonderful. This is the time when we've got to say goodbye to you. Because another lady bearing cakes coming on in a minute.
Oh, yeah, far more important.
Well, no, she'd have to sit on your knee if she came in. But thank you so much. It's been fascinating.
You're very welcome.
And I really have learned more about being the
Conqueror.
Thank you
for the opportunity, yeah.
Nicola, hopefully you'll stay with me.
Yes.
We're going to make Paul leave the apple cake. And we've also got cupcakes coming in a minute. Definitely. So I'm hoping you're going to help me chomp my way through those. Thanks again, Paul. It's been a pleasure to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you.